So yes, Chris asked me to talk about fake news, and I thought I knew about fake news until I started looking into it, because I realised actually I didn't know very much about it at all, probably because I work for the BBC. So there's a little bit of an irony about the fact that I have to talk to you about fake news, because I don't deal with fake news. But obviously it's everywhere, and having looked into it, I realised how prevalent it is and how much more prevalent it's got. At the beginning of this month, the Collins Dictionary coined it as the word of the year, two words of the year. So fake news. Now, the definition of it is deliberate misinformation or hoaxes spread via traditional print and broadcast news media or online social media. Fake news is written and published with the intent to mislead in order to damage an agency, entity or person. This is quite long, sorry. And or gain financially or politically, often with sensationalist, exaggerated or patently false headlines that grab attention. So according to the BBC, it's risen by 365% in 2017. So fake news is often associated with Donald Trump. He regularly coins it and accuses journalists of it. But obviously, more sinister are the accusations that Russian misinformation factories in the run-up to the presidential election were pumping out pro-Trump stories or anti-Clinton stories. This is a picture of supposedly Clinton with Osama bin Laden that was pumped out. It is actually not, this myth has been debunked, and it was actually a picture taken in 2004 of her with a musician, and the bin Laden's head was superimposed on the top. But it was things like this that were pumped out, especially according to the Oxford University study, Twitter users in swing states in the US received more fake news than real stories in the days leading up to the 2016 presidential election. And that study also found that it helped Trump win. So it's actually very dangerous. According to an article in The Telegraph, fake news is seen as one of the greatest threats to democracy, free debate, and the Western order. Last week, there was a story about universities offering advice to students about how to spot fake news. Now, here's another picture, hopefully, and this was circulated after the Westminster terror attack. Sort of just suggesting that the Muslim woman was just walking casually on by. Actually, this week she came out and spoke about what she was doing. She had actually stopped to help, and she was actually on the phone talking to her relatives to tell them that she was safe. Someone took the picture, lied about it, and then spread it around, and that can only be to destabilise and to cause more divisions in society. So it seems at every turn, at every major international news story, fake news is circulating. There were photos doing the rounds in the wake of the unrest in Catalonia of supposed police brutality, but they were from years ago. That fueled dissent as well. And last week, with the coup, or the bloodless coup, in Zimbabwe, should be next picture. So this is only this week. This is a fake border force letter tweeted out saying that those of Zimbabwean origin could no longer come here to the UK. So people are believing these things. And actually, the UK, I think the next slide should be the UK in Zimbabwe actually put this out to say it's fake news. So it's everywhere. And so the more I looked, the more I saw that it was everywhere. But it's my nature as a journalist to check and to double check, to never believe a single source. That's what I'm taught. To corroborate those sources. I have a trained eye for news, so I'm not sure if I would be taken in by anything, and I'm more inclined not to believe anything that doesn't come from the sources that I trust. There's a story of, I don't know if anyone saw this one, a baby rescued from Grenfell Tower 12 days after the fire, which seems completely unbelievable, which it is. There is no reason, there's no motivation for this being put up other than to deliberately mislead. But that, I would just look at and go, there's no truth in that. I've not seen that anywhere else. That cannot be true. And also, as I said to Gab, the font is wrong. It's not right. That's not BBC font. It's everywhere, even with something like this, which can only be just because somebody's a bit bored and they want to make something up. And then there's also the spoofs that make us laugh, you know, the Daily Mash, the Onion, which we laugh at because they're so ridiculous. They're still fake and should be the next. Oh, no, not this one. This isn't funny. This is just another slide showing. This is the Myanmar situation, but they're using this picture from 1971 to show. But the next one is the funny one. So this is a selfie shoe, yeah? Doesn't everyone want one? So this actually was an April Fool's gag. But it was actually, people did fall for it in the US. Some actual real news sites run that as a story. I don't know what you'd want to do with a big hole in the bottom of your shoe. Anyway, it just did make me laugh. Well, having found out and researched the rise and the rise of fake news, now comes the easy part, for me anyway, because I didn't really have to research it because it's just my life. And I apologise now if I sound like a walking, talking advert for the BBC, but that's probably going to happen. I suppose the rise of fake news now puts more emphasis and resonance on the importance of the BBC. Last week, you may not have heard, I did, because I'm a radio girl, but the Director General announced he was scrapping the planned 10 million cuts to local radio budgets. And one of the biggest reasons he said for doing this was to combat the rise in fake news. So I became a journalist a long time ago, 17 years ago, in the year 2000. In that time, the industry has changed and evolved so quickly, it is unrecognisable to the profession that I entered. So I came into the profession as a local newspaper reporter for the Kent and Sussex Courier. Oh, it was lovely. Every Monday, I would go and meet the police and the fire, and they would tell me firsthand what has been going on and what I could report on. Now, that would not happen now. It just wouldn't. Everything is dealt with by press offices. But we used to have relationships with the police and the fire, and they would tell us things, and then we would print it. So we had sort of the truth, I suppose, was coming straight from the logs. I would look at the logs sometimes, and then I would write the stories. Back then, I think there was something like 17 reporters covering West Kent and North East Sussex. Each one of us would have a patch. We would scour court lists, council agendas, sit through endless, dull council meetings to make sure we didn't miss anything that was going on. Now, I think, I can't remember exactly the last time I spoke to the Courier, but I think there's probably about 4 or 6 reporters, and they're mostly in the office in Tunbridge Wells. We used to have satellite offices in Tunbridge, Cranbrook, Crowborough, which was where I was based, East Grinstead. There was a satellite office in Tunbridge Wells in Monson Road. They have now all shut because of the problems associated with the industry because of online. But what that means is that there are not the reporters sitting in there in those council meetings, looking at those court lists, holding people to account, because there is just not the manpower. And I think for me, when the Grenfell fire disaster happened, and obviously it filled everyone with immense sadness, but I lamented the demise in local reporting, because it was one of the reasons that this disaster was allowed to happen. In an article for The Guardian shortly after, a journalist stated that at one time there was 10 journalists covering Kensington and Chelsea. Now there's just one. In those old days, that story would have been found. It would have been uncovered. It would have been researched. It would have been followed, with the people in authority questioned and held to account. And maybe that disaster could have been avoided. The story was all there on a website, with residents fearing a tragedy, but there was no journalist there to look. You know, to be like a dog with a bone, a local newspaper journalist doing what they do, to keep going until someone listened. To me, as a journalist, I am the eyes and ears of the public. That is my job. And I suppose as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, I have to be a follower of the truth as well. So, you know, there are journalists, as we know, that spin, and they will take stories for their own agendas, especially newspapers. But I want to hold those in authority to account. So this is probably why I know so little about the rise of fake news, and why I've not noticed all the swirling social media frenzy of made-up stories of other people repeating fake information as fact. Because for me, the sources of news have not changed that much in 15 years. On January the 5th, 2003, I walked into the BBC, and they gave me this pass, which is a lovely picture of me from when I was 27, and is a little bit yellow. I think that I must have lost a couple as well, so this might not be the original. But on the back, it says, it shows you the BBC values, which are, the top one is trust. which is the foundation of the BBC. We are independent, impartial, and honest. And then it goes on to say audiences, quality, creativity, and respect. Now, this is the BBC pass I use now, which I was issued with probably 2-3 years ago. And it's exactly the same. The qualities and the trust and the values, they haven't changed in all the time I've worked at the BBC. That is what we stick to. And these are the editorial guidelines that you, well, I don't know if you can read, that we're meant to stick to. So this is, everything in here is the rules by which each BBC journalist will stick to and refer to. A bit like our Bible, I suppose. So, as Chris said, I'm a BBC journalist, but I'm not just a journalist. I'm actually the news editor of BBC Radio Kent, so I have to make those decisions all the time about what to report, what to tell other people to report. I work in the newsroom in Tunbridge Wells alongside the TV and digital teams. I started as an online journalist back in 2003 when no one cared about the internet at all, and they thought we were training for weeks and weeks and weeks. So just like, what are you doing over there? Now, obviously, everyone knows that digital is where it's all at. That was the best career move I never knew I was making. But I'm a radio girl. I love radio. I moved into radio, 2005, where I have done everything on that station. Presented, news read, produced, reported. And now I'm in charge of the news desk, and I manage the news desk team of people. So the way I news edit, the way I decide what news to report, the sources I use for my stories, as I said, haven't changed that much. Sometimes people say the BBC is always late in reporting information, which may be true, but that is because we have to get it right. If someone dies and it's all over Twitter, we can't report that. Just because everyone else is, we have to wait, which is quite annoying sometimes. We have to wait for a source that normally is the Press Association, or for another BBC journalist to verify it. So we have to wait, and that's the same for wires, for international and national news, the shooting in Las Vegas. We have to wait until we get the verified source because there is so much fake information. And it can be frustrating, but I would rather rate accuracy over speed any day. And I suppose that comes back to that trust, that you have to trust that what we're putting out as the BBC is the truth, and it's not just rumours on Twitter. I remember on the day of the Westminster terror attack, it was about 15 minutes before the end of my shift, and I saw a flash on my computer from Reuters, and I knew as soon as I saw that flash that something big was going on. I can just tell. But I had to wait until it got verified by someone in the BBC or PA. I use Twitter, as all good journalists do, just to look and see what other people are saying about stuff, and oh my goodness, you should have seen the feed. It just went zoom like that, and at that point I was like, this is huge. But I had to wait, and I waited until it was verified. I turned the copy round, got the newsreader and the presenter to do a bit of broadcasting. I think it was 11 minutes after that attack started that we began broadcasting, which, you know, it's important that you get to hear things straight away, but they're correct. And the problem with Twitter is that there's all sorts of stuff going on there. Having covered so many terror attacks, unfortunately, I can tell as much about the scale of the incident from what they're not saying. If I'm at home watching on the television, I can tell if it's going to be big from what they're not saying as well as what they are saying. But we get all sorts of advisories, and you have to remember that people do make mistakes. So, for instance, this week, we had the final death toll from the Grenfell Tower fire. Now, this actually came from a Met Police press release that I think I got about 8 o'clock in the morning, where they actually contradicted themselves within that press release. So they said 70, including a stillborn baby, and then further down, 70 plus a stillborn baby. So you're like, what is right? We can't put out two different figures. So even in that respect, you've got a source who's, you know, very trusted, that we use, they get it wrong. And we have to go back and we have to check. It can be laborious, but we have to do that. But you would never know that, because I think the story that came out was 70 plus the stillborn baby. So, you know, we have to be sure of our facts before we broadcast, especially for online. So in Kent, we rely for our reporters a lot on our TV colleagues. The successive cuts to local radio mean we have really few reporters, which is really frustrating. We have a political reporter who is amazing. She digs through all the agendas, all the councils, and she holds those in authority to account. She found the story about Kent County councillors giving themselves a 15% rise in expenses. KCC would not have told us about that. It was buried in some meeting, but she found it, we ran it, and we made the leader of KCC explain why he did that. You know, so if we aren't there to ask those people, there is nobody to ask those questions. But we still have to deal with the smoke and mirrors of press releases, government announcements, trying to find the real story to tell our listeners. Now, on Wednesday, the Department for Transport announced it was dropping plans for the lorry park at Stamford West. This is to do with Operation Stack, if everybody is aware of this in the county. It doesn't affect us very much here. Now, that brought great relief to the villagers, but there was nothing about what was going to happen if Brexit results in a no deal and there are long queues at Dover. Where are those lorries going to go? So my job is to report the news, but also to ask the government what they're going to do. Well, try at least, and this is where the frustration of my job comes in, but where I am determined to get to the truth, to tell the people of Kent what the government plans to do. So since Wednesday, I have put in 5 bids with the Roads Minister, Jesse Norman. Every day I ring up the Department for Transport and I say, can we speak to the Roads Minister today and ask him what he's going to do about Operation Stack? And every day they say no. But I've told them that I'm going to keep going and I will tell everybody in Kent how many times I've asked and how many times I've been refused. I'm a bit like that. So, a bit annoying. So that's my job. I work for the public. I'm their eyes and their ears, and I want to tell them the truth. So I'm like a conduit, I suppose. I'm just here to tell you. I'm not here to give an opinion. My faith is it difficult being a news editor? Well, I have to be impartial. That's my job. I do sometimes feel conflicted when there are stories involving Christians, but I don't let that get in the way of how I report something, because I have to be impartial. It is part of the trust that is there. My integrity is paramount to what I do. I have to be honest. I have to tell the truth. And I suppose that's where my belief that Jesus is the truth and that I have to be like him comes out. It is quite difficult. Sometimes I deal daily with personal tragedies. I become a bit immune to them, murders and fatal crashes. And sometimes I do think that I think about things in a slightly different way to other people. If there's a big road crash, I think about it in terms of how I'm going to report that, what I'm going to do. If there's a big fire, who I'm going to send to report on it. I do remember feeling very ground down in the days after Grenfell, though, because we'd just had Manchester, then London Bridge, and then Grenfell, and it was just like reporting on such terrible events. My whole day was taken up with just this awfulness. But I know that I am meant to be where I'm meant to be. I know that through my journey that I am meant to be in the position God wants me to be there. With less and less journalists coming up through the ranks in the way I did, because that grounding is no longer there, my experience in finding, reporting and editing news is more important than ever to be able to tell people the truth and to find the stories to tell the truth. Because I have to guide, make editorial decisions and pull rank on people when they don't do it right, because they won't probably get the same level of experience as me. That's through no fault of their own. That's because of the vast changes in journalism, which is a lot down to social media, the internet. But where my faith, I think, comes into it is how I treat people in the newsroom, which is quite cutthroat. Sometimes it's a self-obsessed industry. It can be very nasty and attract some rather big egos. But I do try to hold fast to my beliefs, that like Jesus, I should treat everyone as equals. that I should remain constant and unwavering in my core values, and those come from my Christian faith, and that I accept everyone and treat everyone the same. So presenters are just the same as the broadcast assistant who is new to the radio industry. I treat them all the same. So my job as a manager is just as important as my job news editing, being fair, treating people with respect, encouraging training, and that is where I believe my Christian beliefs come into play. And that's it. Was that all right, Chris?